The land looks paid for. The taxes say otherwise. The fence leans. The well needs work. The tractor coughs once and goes quiet. You are standing on acres that bleed money every month, and the clock does not care how hard you work. Somewhere inside a federal office, your land is a line on a map. Somewhere else, there is money with rules attached to it. Grants that do not feel like gifts, loans that smile before they tighten, programs built for scale, not for you. Miss one form, one deadline, one inspection, and the door closes without noise. You hear stories at feed stores and online. People say the money is gone, or it was never real, or it cost them the farm. You are not looking for a handout. You are looking for leverage, something that keeps the land intact and buys you time. The question is not whether help exists. The question is what it takes to touch it without losing everything that made the land yours in the first place. Chapter 1. Federal Money and the Small Landowner. You do not start at a bank. You start at a definition. Federal programs decide who you are before they decide what you qualify for. Small landowner is not a feeling. It is acreage, income, production intent, and paperwork. If you miss that first reality, nothing else opens. The federal system assumes production, not dreams, not future plans. If the land does not already produce or is not actively being prepared to produce, most doors stay shut. You can own land outright and still be invisible to the system. Ownership alone is not leverage. The United States Department of Agriculture does not operate as one office. It is a structure with silos. Each silo controls different money, different rules, and different risk. If you treat it as one place, you waste time and burn credibility. The Farm Service Agency handles loans, disaster assistance, and baseline eligibility. This is where beginning farmers, small operators, and underserved landowners usually start. These are not grants in the casual sense. These are loans with federal backing, slower timelines, and strict use rules. They exist because commercial banks do not want you. The Natural Resources Conservation Service handles cost-share programs. This is not cash in hand. This is reimbursement after approved work is done and verified. Soil, water, fencing, erosion control, livestock management. If your land touches dirt or water, this office matters. Rural Development handles housing, utilities, and business infrastructure. Many landowners ignore this office because it does not look agricultural at first glance. That mistake costs years. This is where wells, power, broadband, storage, and small business facilities sometimes get funded. None of these offices move fast. Speed is not a feature. Compliance is. Most federal money aimed at small landowners is not free. It is shared risk. Cost share means you spend first and get paid back later. Loans mean long terms and narrow use. Disaster programs mean proof, timing, and patience. Grants exist, but they are narrow, competitive, and often routed through states or nonprofits before they ever reach you. The first pressure point is eligibility. Beginning farmer status matters. Years of operation matter. Income caps matter. Land use history matters. If your land sat idle for too long, some programs treat it as a liability, not an opportunity. If you cannot prove active management, you are not seen as serious. Paperwork is not a side task. It is the work. Forms establish identity. Maps establish boundaries. Conservation plans establish intent. If you avoid this stage, the system avoids you back. Every federal interaction creates a record. Once it exists, it follows you. Missed deadlines stay visible. Incomplete applications mark you as high risk. Staff turnover does not erase history. This is not personal. It is administrative memory. Most failures happen early, not because the landowner is unqualified, but because the landowner underestimates the process. They walk in asking what money is available. The system responds better when you ask what problems they are funded to solve. Erosion, water quality, food access, beginning farmer retention, infrastructure gaps. Frame your land inside those problems. Inspections are not optional. If money touches the land, someone verifies the work. They check measurements. They check materials. They check timing. If you cut corners, repayment can be denied. If you change plans midstream without approval, funding can be clawed back. This is where people get hurt. Federal loans feel safer than private debt. Lower rates, longer terms. That safety is conditional. Use restrictions are tight. Selling land tied to a federal loan is not simple. Restructuring is slow. Default follows different rules, but it still follows. Cost-share programs feel harmless until the reimbursement window closes. If work is done outside the approved window, it does not count. If documentation is missing, it does not count. If inspection fails, it does not count. You still pay the bill. The system favors people who speak its language. Conservation plans, practices, compliance, timelines. If you refuse to learn that language, you remain dependent on others who do. That dependence carries risk. Underserved programs exist for a reason. They are not shortcuts. They are pressure relief valves built into a system that historically excluded people. They still require proof. They still require follow-through. They still punish mistakes. Disaster assistance is not insurance. It is conditional relief after verification. Weather events do not automatically trigger payments. Losses must be documented. Deadlines matter. Many landowners miss help because they assume someone else filed first. Federal money does not fix bad land decisions. It amplifies good ones and exposes weak ones. If your plan depends on funding arriving on time, it is already fragile. Federal programs move on federal timelines, not yours. The hardest truth is this: the system does not care about your attachment to the land. It cares about outcomes that justify budgets. Soil saved, water protected, production increased, access expanded. If your land can deliver those outcomes, doors open. If not, you wait. At the end of this chapter, the pressure is clear. Federal money exists. It is real. It is slow, conditional, and unforgiving. The next question is whether smaller, closer programs offer safer leverage or deeper traps. Chapter 2, State, Local, and Non-Federal Leverage. The federal office has a map. Your land is a dot. The state office has a list. Your name may not be on it. Local programs feel invisible until you need them most. State, local, and niche programs operate differently, but they can be the difference between survival and surrender. They carry opportunity and risk, and for small landowners, both can strike without warning. State departments of agriculture control a network most landowners never see. Cost share funds, matching grants, pilot programs, and conservation easements flow through them. Each state defines eligibility differently. Acres counted in one state may not count in another. Income thresholds shift. Production type matters. Staff interpret rules with discretion. One county may approve a request that another rejects outright. You cannot assume fairness. You can only assume rules. Conservation districts act as gatekeepers. Boards meet monthly or quarterly. They approve, reject, and audit projects. You may never meet them directly, but their decisions can make or break access to local dollars. Many small landowners assume these districts only exist to monitor land, but in reality, they control the first filter for state-administered federal funds. Skip this step, and the paperwork you submit upstream might never be touched. Programs target very specific outcomes: soil improvement, water retention, wildlife management, fence and barn construction, irrigation systems, livestock management. Even minor deviations from prescribed practices can disqualify an applicant. You cannot improvise. You cannot make it work after the fact. State auditors verify each action. They measure, record, and report. Mistakes are logged and revisited during subsequent applications. Timing is another pressure point. Some programs operate on a fiscal calendar that differs from the agricultural cycle. Application windows are narrow. If your application arrives a day late, it is treated as if it never existed. Approvals are not instant. Reimbursements can lag months. If cash flow is tight, you may have to finance projects out of pocket before approval, creating a temporary debt trap. This is how small landowners bleed money quietly. Pilot programs offer promise but also uncertainty. They are limited in scope, designed to test outcomes. Only certain crops, livestock, or land types qualify. Staff interpret criteria differently. One county office may approve a dairy fencing project, while the next office rejects it because the herd is deemed too small. You must document everything: photos, receipts, maps, soil tests, water assessments. Each piece of evidence matters. The lack of a single document can undo months of work. Microgrants exist at the state level, sometimes routed through nonprofits, community foundations, or university extension programs. They can pay for infrastructure upgrades, small equipment, or training. They do not scale. They do not solve chronic problems. They are tactical, not strategic. Mismanaging a microgrant can prevent future approvals. Landowners who treat microgrants as free money end up paying in lost opportunity. Local gatekeepers wield unexpected power. Extension agents, district supervisors, and committee members often hold the key to program entry. Their approval is subjective. They evaluate commitment, competence, and credibility. Reputation matters. If you arrive unprepared, they may reject the application outright. Small landowners with limited experience face this challenge constantly. Program stacking is a possibility, but also a trap. Using one program to fund another requires precision. A misstep can trigger audits or repayment obligations. Federal and state money rarely overlaps cleanly. Each program has restrictions. Using funds to cover previously incurred costs can lead to clawbacks. Local auditors watch, sometimes without alerting you. Compliance is ongoing. It does not stop at approval. Administrative risk is constant. Audits, inspections, reporting deadlines, and site visits are part of the territory. If you do not understand the rhythm, you fail. If you miss one inspection, you pay the price. Local programs often require reporting on a quarterly or semi-annual basis. Each submission must match the original plan exactly. Variants, even minor, can disqualify reimbursements or require repayment. Many small landowners fail not because they cannot meet program requirements, but because they underestimate bureaucratic friction. They assume programs exist to help them. They assume guidelines are flexible. They assume staff are advocates rather than regulators. That assumption is deadly. Staff enforce rules. They do not make exceptions. Approval is earned, not given. Competition for state and local funds is subtle, but fierce. Pilot programs are limited. Microgrants are scarce. Cost share allocations can run out in weeks. Being first, complete, and credible matters more than having the largest project. Some landowners lose not because they lack eligibility, but because they lack preparation. Timing, presentation, and documentation are tactical weapons. State-level training programs exist, but are rarely comprehensive. They may teach soil management, conservation practices, or record keeping. They do not teach bureaucracy. They do not teach paperwork strategy or audit avoidance. Landowners who skip these programs often stumble at first applications. Those who attend gain a tactical edge. Knowledge of timing, forms, and local protocol translates directly into dollars. The state system is idiosyncratic. It is responsive to politics, staff priorities, and available funding. Programs may vanish, change, or expand without warning. Past success does not guarantee future approval. What worked last year may fail this year if an office shifts emphasis, changes scoring criteria, or reinterprets guidelines. You cannot rely on precedent. You rely on preparation. Local knowledge is everything. Which supervisor reviews applications? Which county favors certain crops? Which district prioritizes water retention versus erosion control? These details matter more than land size, production history, or financial need. Ignorance of local culture and politics costs landowners silently. There is a quiet tension between federal and local programs. State offices may prioritize local objectives over federal guidance. Cost share formulas may differ. Timing may differ. Approvals may conflict. Landowners navigating both levels must track every requirement, reconcile differences, and ensure documentation aligns with both agendas. Misalignment invites rejection or repayment. The psychological pressure is relentless. Each application, inspection, and report carries weight. A misstep is not just lost funds, it is lost credibility. Future applications may be judged more harshly. Reputational risk is high. Small landowners operate on tight margins, making every mistake costly. Stress compounds with each new program attempt. State and local programs are not a panacea. They amplify the competent, punish the unprepared, and expose weakness. They can provide infrastructure, equipment, and project funding, but only if the landowner navigates the system with discipline. One misfiled form can erase months of work. One missed inspection can trigger repayment. One misunderstood rule can close the door indefinitely. At the end of this chapter, the picture is clear. State, local, and niche programs exist. They can be exploited for leverage, but the window is narrow, the rules strict, and the penalties unforgiving. Opportunity and danger coexist at every stage. The next question is whether looking beyond borders and combining strategies can secure long-term survival without creating unmanageable debt or dependency. The pressure does not pause, it escalates. Chapter 3, Canada and Long Game Strategy. You have navigated federal offices. You have learned state and local rules. Now the question becomes long game. How do you survive, leverage every program safely, and keep the land yours decades from now? Part of that answer lies across the border. Canada's agricultural support differs, but the principles translate. Understanding philosophy, strategy, and risk is more important than memorizing every program. Canadian agriculture is structured differently. Federal and provincial governments divide responsibility. Ottawa sets broad policy, funding frameworks, and disaster relief. Provinces administer many programs, tailoring eligibility and focus to regional priorities. Small landowners face a patchwork, not unlike U.S. state systems, but provincial offices control access with far more discretion. For landowners who want leverage, knowing the right office matters more than the right program. Canadian programs are often framed as investment in sustainability rather than rescue. Grants, cost share, and loans exist, but they come with conditions. Proof of active management, environmental compliance, and production planning is mandatory. Programs emphasize soil health, water management, and ecosystem balance. Incentives for fencing, drainage, irrigation, and infrastructure exist, but timing, documentation, and local approval carry weight equal to the dollars offered. The most important lesson from Canada is strategy over detail. Small landowners cannot chase every program. They must prioritize. They must plan projects, stack approvals, and sequence work to match funding windows. Missed deadlines or misaligned priorities erase gains. Even small miscalculations can trigger repayment obligations or audit scrutiny. The risk is invisible until it materializes. Stacking programs is the high-stakes game. In the U.S., a landowner may layer USDA loans with state cost share, pilot grants, and local microfunds. In Canada, layering requires careful alignment between federal frameworks and provincial rules. One program may reimburse a practice while another forbids the same expenditure. Misalignment triggers audits, clawbacks, and lost credibility. Strategic sequencing is mandatory. Debt traps loom quietly. Loans feel safe, especially with government backing, but when combined with multiple program obligations, repayment schedules, and maintenance responsibilities, leverage can quickly become liability. A small landowner must calculate risk across all programs, across years, and across potential revenue. Ignoring cumulative burden is how many fail. Canadian programs highlight a mindset that U.S. landowners can adopt: long-term planning, sustainability, and compliance-first execution. Success is measured not by immediate payout, but by resilience. Can the land remain productive, solvent, and compliant for 10, 20, or 30 years? Each program is a tool, not a solution. Misusing one can create debt, legal exposure, or environmental risk. Even high-level awareness of Canadian approaches provides value. It encourages thinking beyond immediate cash needs, focusing on sequence, timing, and layered strategy. Landowners must assess risk tolerance, operational capacity, and administrative bandwidth. The more programs you touch, the more precise your planning must be. Documentation is the invisible pressure. Every program requires records. Receipts, photos, plans, approvals, and reports create a paper trail. In Canada or the U.S., that trail is permanent. Inconsistent documentation jeopardizes future access, triggers audits, and undermines credibility. Small landowners who fail to track every action risk losing not just money, but eligibility entirely. Long-term survival also demands operational discipline. Infrastructure improvements must match program guidelines. Soil and water projects must meet environmental standards. Livestock management must comply with both animal welfare and productivity rules. Cutting corners erodes future options. Compliance is continuous, not episodic. Programs may approve today but review again tomorrow. Stacking strategy includes contingency planning. Programs may change, vanish, or pause. Political shifts, budget cycles, and administrative priorities influence access. Landowners must plan for gaps in funding, delays in reimbursement, and audits that revisit previous years. Failure to anticipate contingencies is how minor issues escalate into crises. Communication is essential. Whether U.S. or Canadian programs, staff interpret rules. They have discretion. Establishing credibility, demonstrating competence, and maintaining professionalism influence approvals. Missteps, missed appointments, or incomplete applications invite scrutiny. Strategic communication is as valuable as the funding itself. The psychological landscape cannot be ignored. Small landowners carry constant pressure, balancing operational workload, program obligations, financial survival, and long-term land stewardship. Each program adds layers of responsibility. Stress accumulates. Mistakes compound. Those who thrive are disciplined, organized, and methodical. Those who fail often succumb to administrative fatigue. Risk management is the ultimate arbiter. Evaluate each program not just for funding, but for exposure, compliance burden, timing risk, repayment potential, and operational fit. Not all programs are worth pursuing. Some look generous but create dependency or administrative overload. Prioritization separates survival from failure. The long game requires sequence. Identify the most critical projects first, infrastructure that improves revenue, soil and water measures that prevent loss, and legal compliance that preserves land rights. Layer programs where possible, but always sequence to reduce exposure. The wrong order multiplies risk and drains capital. Cultural and regulatory differences between the US and Canada reinforce one principle. Programs are tools, not lifelines. The goal is to make land productive, compliant, and sustainable. Money alone does not solve structural problems. It amplifies competence and exposes weakness. Strategic thinking matters more than dollar amounts. Finally, landowners must develop an ongoing review process. Track projects, deadlines, inspections, reimbursements, and audits. Anticipate shortfalls. Adjust plans. Document everything. Resilience is built on record-keeping and foresight, not luck. Programs are available, but they reward discipline. The undisciplined pay in time, debt, and lost opportunity. By the end of this chapter, the lesson is clear. Programs, U.S. federal, state, local, and Canadian, exist. They provide leverage, but they demand precision, documentation, timing, and strategy. Misalignment costs money, credibility, and land. The small landowner who succeeds is not chasing every dollar. They are sequencing, documenting, planning, and executing. They survive because they treat programs as tools, not guarantees. The ultimate question remains, can a small landowner, using all the resources available, build a landholding that is self-sustaining, compliant, and resilient for decades? The answer depends on strategy, discipline, and endurance. Success is measured not in immediate payout, but in survival. And survival is earned, day by day, form by form, inspection by inspection, decision by decision.